Welcome to episode 3 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I am Greg Johnson, your host, and today is Friday, May 1st, 2020. The cars you hear in the background are my surroundings. Currently, I am at Melrose Avenue and Emerald Street, the northeast corner of that intersection, and I am heading down the path. I want to give you sort of the audible background of one of my walks that I take and where I like to record these sessions. So anyway, normally I don't start the recording until I am well into the trail and have the protection of the trees and less background noise, but this will sort of give you that sense of transition from the busy traffic noises in the background, and you'll start to hear more birds chirping. So let's get to the topic of this episode, and that is tips and suggestions on what purchase to make when looking for a computer. And I want to begin this by sharing a story. I had a call from somebody needing tech support. They had a problem with their printer. And I went over to their home and sorry, I was going to just let you enjoy some of that bird song. Okay, back from our little commercial break there for the bird. So I got this call. Somebody was having trouble with their printer. I went to their home, and they greeted me, and we talked, and I said, okay, so where's your computer? And they said, we don't have one. So, and this was quite a few years ago, so I was just a little bit surprised that they were having a printer problem, and they didn't have a computer. So I thought, well, that's the problem, is you don't have any way to print. But no, we got to talking, and it turned out that they didn't have a computer. They had a printer. The printer was hooked to their Wi-Fi network, and they were using iPads and iPhones. So basically, their computing for emails, for web browsing, for reading the news, watching videos, all of that was being done on tablets, on iPads. And I, of course, knew that that could be done. I just had never seen somebody take that plunge. I'm sort of tech immersed, and I have all kinds of gadgets and computers, and I just wouldn't imagine, like, why would somebody want to be without a computer? But the why, the answer to that why question became really quite obvious as I worked with them, and I've worked with other people who've decided to just either primarily or entirely use iPhones and iPads, or some similar, equivalent, like a Samsung tablet or Android phone. And that is that with computers, you have, hard drives that crash. There are viruses that infect them. You need someone like me that you have to pay to help with the technology. And it's just kind of expensive. It's costly in terms of time, and it's costly in terms of money. And so anyway, that I share that anecdote at the outset of this short podcast to say that, if you think you're searching for a computer, some desktop computer, you might want to consider all the options before you move forward, or at least in your decision process, consider what other options there are out there. Okay, so there are some major forks in the road as you go down this path of deciding what computer to get. Certainly there is the question of whether or not you want Windows or Apple. Some people know that because they've used one or the other for many years and they want something that's familiar, but sometimes there are people that want to consider another option. So you'd want to choose if you're going to go with Windows or Apple, or as I mentioned, within the mobile world, there's Apple's devices, and there are other devices from Samsung and Motorola and LG and a bunch of other companies. But that's the first thing to decide. And not significantly part of the market, but something to consider is that there are Chromebook computers. These are computers that don't run Windows and they don't run Apple. They run essentially Google Chrome interface with the Google browser, but also some other things. You can type documents and have spreadsheets. And also to throw into the mix, should be mentioned Linux. There are different versions of Linux. You might have heard of Ubuntu, and there are others out there. So generally a person would need to be a little more tech savvy to use Linux. Other than the saving of money, there's not too much to be benefited from going to Linux. The support is going to be available through sort of user groups and that type of thing, or paid support from somebody that knows it. So anyway, I don't want to slow down too much there. We're looking at Windows, Apple, Android, Chromebooks, Linux, but you're probably going to, I would guess, be most likely to be choosing Windows or Apple. And then, once you've decided what operating system works best for you, you'll need to think about whether or not you want a desktop or a laptop computer. In general, the desktop computer is going to give you more for your money. So you'll have the ability to upgrade it. It will probably have a faster processor, easier to install more memory. And, you know, the thing about laptop computers is that increasingly they're becoming lighter and slimmer and less easy to have access for repairs or upgrades. So if you're somebody who might want to upgrade later, you may want to consider a desktop computer. But one common misconception that I hear from people a lot is we'll be having this discussion about what computer to buy, and they'll say, oh, I need one that I really want, you know, a big desktop display and a full-size keyboard, and I want to use a mouse. I don't want to use that touchpad that's on a laptop. And so what I encourage people to consider is that if they really do want to have a portable computer, like a laptop, and they also feel a need to have a desktop computer, that they should consider the option of having a laptop computer and plugging in a full-size computer display. So you can have a desktop computer experience with the keyboard and mouse and monitor all plugged into a laptop computer. And that's something then definitely to consider, whether you're going with Apple or Windows. And, you know, particularly for people that are interested in getting an Apple computer, they're expensive. And so, you know, when you start looking at getting an Apple desktop computer and an Apple laptop computer, that's going to be a big chunk of money. And if you can just get one computer, like an Apple laptop, and have it function as a desktop and a laptop, you'll save a lot of money. And the same is true for, you know, Windows users. So that's something to consider. What sort of size computer do you want? Do you want it to be a laptop, or do you want it to be a desktop computer? And then, as I started out this show with that story I told you about the people using iPads, maybe you can consider whether or not an iPad would do everything you need to do. There's been a really significant development in the world of iPads recently, and that is that Apple has significantly improved the sort of file system that you might use to organize your files. And you can use Apple's iCloud Drive, but if you want, you could use Google Drive, on an iPad, or you could use OneDrive or Box or Dropbox or these different services. So that had been a hurdle in the past because, you know, people would be on their iPad, they could check email and go to the internet, but there wasn't really any way to get access to hundreds of files and organize them. And so you were still kind of anchored to some sort of desktop or laptop computer operating system. But that's something to consider then. And with the new iPad Pro, it has a USB-C adapter, which can accept a full-size keyboard. You can plug in a mouse, a full-size computer display, and you can kind of turn the iPad into a desktop computer. So now, instead of having to buy all these different devices from Apple that, you know, can collectively cost thousands of dollars, as much as a used car perhaps, you could just get one device, an Apple iPad, and have that as your everything computer. It can be your tablet and your laptop and your desktop. And, you know, when you get down to deciding the specifics of what to get, feel free to, you know, email me or contact whoever is your techie friend that gives you guidance on things. But this podcast is really not intended to figure out specifically what model computer you should get and from where, but more generally to get you thinking about what technology options are available. Okay. So, as we look at the desktop computer options from that are Windows computers, there's another fork in the road there. And it has to do with, do you want to have separate components or do you want the computer to be what's referred to as an all-in-one? So the all-in-one computers will have the CPU, what is normally a big rectangular shaped box on the floor, that's built into the display. And usually these are really kind of slick, nicely designed computers. HP has them, Dell has them, other companies offer them. And the advantage is if you have built in to this all-in-one device, if you have a webcam and a microphone and, you know, the display is there and maybe it's a touch display and the CPU, all of this stuff is built in. The keyboard and mouse perhaps are wireless, so you don't have a lot of wires around. And if you're short on desk space, these can really help. You'll have a lot less clutter. And in addition to having less clutter, it's easier to use services like Zoom or Skype where you're wanting to do video chat. Because when I get support calls, I'll give you an example. I get support calls and a person will say that their microphone isn't working. You know, they're in a chat, but the person can't hear them, but they can hear the other person. Or they might say, you know, my video's not working, but I can hear them or they can hear me, or any variation of that. Maybe their headphones aren't working, so the person can hear them. So it's either their microphone doesn't work, their headphones don't work, or speakers or webcam. So there are all these different components that might not be configured correctly, that maybe at one time were working and now they aren't, that maybe got unplugged. You know, there's so many things that can go wrong. And so basically by having it be all-in-one, you can avoid some of those problems. The drawback of an all-in-one computer is that it's not as easy to upgrade or work on and everything's in one unit. So if you had a regular desktop computer and the display stopped working, you just go and get another used computer display for $60 and you keep working. But if you have an all-in-one computer and it needs to get repaired at the shop or something, or it takes 2 weeks to get it fixed, well, now you're completely out of operation with that. Okay. But, you know, if you get a reliable unit, and if you get the 4 or 5 year warranty that comes with on-site repair, then you're in a better situation. And I've experienced this where somebody would, you know, had an all-in-one unit and it had a problem. It was a Dell. And Dell sent a technician out within a day or two on site with the tools and the parts, everything that was needed, and it got fixed. So that seemed like a good way to go. So that's all-in-ones. And one thing I would recommend when you get a computer, particularly if it's an all-in-one, is that you're not going to have an option later to switch to a different display. You might be able to have a secondary display, but my point is go ahead and get a nice display, a big display, and then you'll have a system you can keep using, and in the future you won't regret having a small display. And I should say that all-in-one computers generally cost more than a separate component system because they're just a little more intensively designed, you know. Okay, I think that's it for all-in-one computers. So now let's talk about desktop computers. Oh, and before we go on, this point applies really to whatever device you get. Make every effort, I mean, I would say 100%, you really need to ask for a computer that has a solid-state hard drive. There are still expensive computers being sold that don't have solid-state hard drives. They're Apple computers that don't have solid-state hard drives, and Windows computers. In fact, most of the computers you'll find today at Staples or, you know, Best Buy are systems that use old traditional hard drives. Those drives are slow and they heat up. The heat causes problems. They tend to fail. And they're using technology from like decades ago, decades old technology. You've probably noticed on your smartphone, or if you use a tablet like the iPad, you might notice you push the on button and it's just on. It's instantly on. There's no, you know, waiting for it to start up, right? And that's how, for the most part, that's how a solid-state computer starts up. There's not a lot of time waiting for the operating system to load. And when you launch programs, they launch pretty quickly. So that's a point just to remember. Get a solid-state hard drive system. And now let's go on to desktop computers. So as I mentioned, at Best Buy, let's use them for an example, their computers are mostly going to have the old-style traditional hard drives. So you'll have to kind of shop around and request one that has solid state. There's a good choice from HP, and also Dell has something where you'll see in the specifications it might indicate that it has a solid state hard drive, but that it also has a traditional hard drive. Well, that's fairly common. The reason for that is that your operating system and your programs you'll very likely want to have on the faster solid-state drive. But the data, you know, word processing documents, some photos, music, or whatever, it could be stored on a traditional drive if you have, you know, a lot of data and you don't want to pay the premium cost of having a very large solid-state drive. You may want to do that. You may want to go ahead and get a hybrid system. Now, one clarification to make here is that the hybrid hard drives, there are some that are essentially one hard drive that has both solid-state chips in it and also the traditional spinning platters. And that's really, it's an inexpensive way to get sort of a faster experience, but it's really the worst of both worlds because it doesn't come with a lot of storage as far as solid state. And it gets hot, it can crash, it's just not a good solution. And if you feel that you need extra storage, I might suggest that you consider an external hard drive. So you can expand your system as much as needed, just plugging in ever larger hard drives. Okay, I'm a little bit winded because I just climbed up a pretty steep cliff that was off my normal trail. I was kind of navigating through there. Not really any paths to follow, so now I'm back on the regular trail and catch my breath a bit. Okay, so the thing about the hard drives then is you'll want to get solid state, and I don't want to be repetitive here, but when you get the solid state hard drive, there's a question as to what size should it be. So it should be big enough to hold the operating system and to hold your programs and preferably your data also. And then you don't have to worry about a secondary drive that might be slower. So I would say at a minimum, probably 256 gigabytes, and that would be for light users that don't put a lot of data on their drive. The next step up would be probably 500 or 512 or some number around there of a solid state drive. And if you get external drives, if you have huge collections of photos or videos or music or some other files that take up a lot of room, you can put them on an external drive, and I would recommend that it be a solid state hard drive also. It's a one-time purchase. You're going to spend probably, you know, $150 for a solid state hard drive instead of buying one for $60 that's a traditional hard drive. But I think you'll appreciate having the extra speed and having it not use as much power, have it run cooler, and in general, just be more reliable. So even if you're using a drive for backing up, I would suggest have a solid state hard drive for backing up. That noise in the background is the lawn care guy who's driving by on his ride-on mower. Okay, so now we've talked about desktop versus laptop and all-in-one versus separate components, the importance of getting a solid-state hard drive regardless of what you buy. And now I want to go to the next sort of phase of this discussion presentation, and that is trying to decide whether or not you want to go with Windows or Apple. And sorry, normally it's not this noisy on the trail. And as I said, I was going to start the recording further down where there is no road noise, but I wanted you to get a sense of what this walk is like. I'll take the path through the woods just when it's windy like it is today to kind of cut back on the wind noise. But otherwise, on most days, I would just take the normal trail. Okay, so there are some advantages to going with Apple. The one that you'll probably hear the most is that Apple computers don't get viruses. Well, that's not exactly true. There are some viruses that can get into your computer, usually with your help, unwittingly. You know, you see a pop-up message and it says call a phone number and let somebody get on your computer. Well, when you do that, they put a virus in, or you click to download and install something that really shouldn't be. That's usually how those get installed. But in general, Apple computers tend to require less upkeep and maintenance in the hardware and software. So that is sort of an advantage. But for me, the biggest advantage of Apple computers is that Apple has this whole cloud service that integrates well with their computers. And what I mean by that is that if you have your calendar, if you're using an online calendar, and if you want your contacts to all be in one place, in one synchronized collection of names and addresses and emails and phone numbers, Apple works well with that. And so you'll find on your Apple iPhone and your iPad and your, you know, computer that you just have one list of contacts and they're everywhere. And when you update something on one device, it gets updated on every other device. And the photos also get synchronized from one device to another. So you can be on your big screen computer and see larger versions of the images. You can use the convenience of a full-size keyboard on a larger device rather than trying to type things into your phone. So it's really like, because of this cloud, it's like all the devices are kind of connected to each other, and it generally doesn't matter which one you use. You just want to pick up the device that feels most comfortable and effective and efficient for the task you're about to do. Like right now, I'm recording on the iPhone. I wouldn't want to be carrying around a laptop computer. So that, I'd say that's a real big advantage of Apple. And what I find on Windows computers is that there isn't really an equivalent to that. And for example, if you're using Microsoft's email service, Outlook, can be a little confusing. Outlook is an email service from Microsoft, but it's also a software program from Microsoft, and both of these things have the same name. So if we just refer to Outlook, a person might not be sure what we're talking about. So anyway, if you're using Microsoft's free email, which would be, you know, yourname@outlook.com, you will be able to put some contacts in there. And you can export and import contacts, but that's a manual process. So the contacts you put in there, they should show up on your Windows computer. And if you're using Outlook on an Android device or a Apple device, the contacts will show up there. But there's no way to kind of like merge them that I know of. There's no like single address book program that'll pull your contacts from Google and Outlook and other sources, Yahoo, and show them to you in one place. If you decide to go with Google, then all your contacts are in Google, and you'll need to use Google's web interface to see your contacts. Google doesn't have an app in Windows to work with your contacts. So anyway, things just get a little bit disjointed in the Windows world when it comes to cloud data synchronization, to have, you know, your calendar, your contacts, your emails. If you have Outlook, that works, but as you start to move to other devices like mobile devices, maybe all of the content you want isn't there. So those would be the 2 points with Apple. Maybe a little more secure, well-built hardware, nice cloud interface, and then finally, you know, they're generally good for multimedia, photography, video editing, that type of thing. The advantage of Windows computers is that the power you get for the money you spend is really considerable. So you're going to save money. You'll have a device that's easy to find, you know, parts for. You can go out to the store and buy an inexpensive display for your desktop computer, or, you know, have a wide array of choices of keyboards. It's kind of the dominant market product. And that's just something to research and consider, but those are some points that I would make. And another point in here I'll just bring up now is, if you decide to go with a laptop, we could oversimplify in this and just say that there are kind of two laptop choices. There's some laptops that are kind of big and heavy and chunky, and maybe those give you more features or more power, more accessibility to upgrade. And then there are these super slim, lightweight, thin laptops that generally don't have as many ports on them, aren't as easy to open up and get into to repair or upgrade, but they're great for portability. And I would say also that these, generally the bigger, chunkier, heavier laptops are the ones that would give you a 17-inch display or something, you know, larger display and a larger keyboard with a number pad included. So that's kind of a decision to make. Do you want the larger one? Do you want the smaller, lighter one? And if you use the suggestion I mentioned earlier of, you know, having the external keyboard, external monitor, external mouse, you may go ahead and just get one of these super light, small laptops and not worry too much about the small screen, because most of the time you'll be sitting at your desk, and on the rare times you travel, then it's okay. And I finally made it to this sort of wetland area where there are these geese. And there are also some frogs making noises in the background. This is really where I should have started the show. The acoustics here are much better, less road noise, and lots of good nature sounds. But that's the experience, is going from lots of traffic and noise to this more tranquil surrounding. Okay, so I think that's most of what I would tell someone, the information I'd provide for somebody starting out this journey of figuring out what device to get. And definitely, you know, in the past it was possible to spend time in the stores and try out a bunch of computers. That really can't be underestimated, the value of that, I want to say. Right now, we're in, you know, May already of 2020, the last 2 months or more, people have been sort of sheltering in place because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And for buying, you know, laptop computer, you really do want to hold it in your hands and see the display. Is it too glossy? Is it too shiny? You want to touch the keyboard. There's so many tactile aspects to buying a laptop computer. How well is the backlighting functioning for the keyboard, if you have that? Get a sense of how precise the touch screen is. Really look at the function keys and all the ports. So the fact that we can't just go in and meander around a store, that's a real drawback. So you'll probably want to rely on friends. If there's somebody you could borrow their computer, that would be something to do. And many stores offer very lenient, very lenient policies on returns. You know, that was rare, that sort of squeaky noise you heard just there is one of those service trucks going down the railroad track that's up on the hill. So, I hope you don't mind all these distractions. There's another service vehicle on the railroad tracks. But my goal is on these shows, and I will get more and more skilled with this as I go on, but to have as much focus and structure as possible, and I'd like to record them without a lot of editing. You know, once you get into the editing process, there's no end to that. I've spent many hours before on short, like, promo videos, 30 seconds, 1 second, you know, just getting just the right sound and transitions and all that. So anyway, same is true with audio. So there are going to be some background noises, maybe some little interruptions, but it really helps to get these podcasts to you promptly. Now, I'm certainly happy to take any questions. If you want to email or call or, you know, leave a comment on the website, however you want to reach out, I can try to answer specific questions and even guide you through the process of getting the right technology that meets your needs. But those are basically the main considerations of what to look for and what to consider. And if you go this path of the iPad, I would just say that you'll want to become familiar with what apps are available. For example, there is, through Microsoft, you can get Microsoft Office 365, which is now called just Microsoft 365. But that would be a way that you could have Microsoft Word and Excel on the iPad. And for, you know, the basic user, I don't know, maybe that would be 50 to 70% of the people out there who just want to do basic email, web browsing, videos, and writing some documents. I think that should be fine. What you'll notice is that some of the iPad programs are not the full desktop version. A lot of features are missing. So they work, and the documents you create will be compatible with, you know, Microsoft Word. But features like detailed formatting of footnotes or something like that, you know, it's just not going to be there. You can receive a document that's been formatted with headers and footers and fancy, you know, formatting, but you can't sort of create those things. And there's also a web version of Microsoft Word, so that's something to consider. For people that want to use and be part of the Google ecosystem, I was talking earlier about the Apple ecosystem. With Google, something a lot of people don't realize is when you have a Gmail address, that Gmail address is basically your login account to all the Google services. There's Google Drive, Google Docs, YouTube is even a kind of subscription service where you log in and you can have channels that you subscribe to, you can have shows you purchase, videos, movies you purchase. So one of the features of Google is to have Google Docs, and if you use that feature, you're sort of locked into their system and the limitations of their system. There are also some benefits that are just amazing. And that's something to consider, is that, you know, for some projects, a certain device, like an iPad, might be really the best choice for that project. Perhaps for audio editing, there's a program called Ferrite on the iPad. That's just a really nice way to do detailed audio editing. And you're not going to get that experience on any other device. And so, you know, there's some projects, let's talk about software. There's some projects for which using Google Docs, a Google spreadsheet or a Google document, collaborating with other people, you can't really get that same experience using Microsoft Word or another product, at least not for free in such a nice universal platform. So there are these caveats that I would want you to be aware of that you're going to find. You may have to change your own workflow and work habits and what you're doing to adapt to whatever technology you're using, especially if you want to be kind of a minimalist and just use a laptop or just use an iPad or something like that. And we haven't talked about price, but basically, you'll find, I guess I should warn you about this, you'll find that at Staples, Best Buy, Amazon, wherever, there are some computers, some laptop computers that are like $200, maybe $150, brand new from HP and other companies. You're going to see that and think, wow, that's what I want. I can get a computer for $200. Well, some of those computers don't have a fully functional version of Windows. It's like a limited version, and you have to go in and disable some things in order to be able to just do like certain updates. So I would say stay away from things that are just too cheap, you know. And the Chromebook is an interesting idea for people that really, really just want to do email and web. But for those who want to start doing any kind of content creation or using other software, Chromebooks aren't going to work. So those cheap options aren't a good way to go. And you want something that you're going to buy once and use for many years. And if you buy something that's cheap, it may break or may just be too slow to be useful over a period of time. Okay. And to follow up on something I mentioned previously about being able to have hands-on, particularly for not just laptops, but getting a sense of the weight and size of an iPad, or you're buying a big desktop display, you want to get a sense of how that looks. There are still some stores that are open that are using social distancing, like Costco, where you can go in and see the display and get an idea of how that's going to work for you. So you might try that, you know, just to be able to see what you're ordering. And otherwise, just buy something and hope it works, and if it doesn't, ship it back. With regard to computer displays, whether you're hooking a display up to a laptop, desktop, or an iPad, there are some really nice televisions that are what's called 4K, so they're a little bit higher resolution than HD. HD is 1920 by 1080, the number of dots, pixels going across and down the screen. So the 4K is a higher resolution display. And if you're sitting close to it, because it's higher resolution, you're not going to see the gaps in those dots. And that's really a nice thing. So you can have this big television-sized display for your computer work. I've been using a Samsung. It's about 43 inches. And that size seems to be about just right. I had some time last year to look at displays, and I went to Costco and Best Buy and other places, Staples. And I found that the really large displays, the 53-inch, the 63-inch, the 72-inch displays, even with 4K, would start to look a little fuzzy if you're sitting close. Now, the normal application for those is to put them in your living room and watch TV. And if you bring it close, like you're going to use it like a computer display, that sort of doesn't work typically. Because the display is so big, those dots that I was mentioning, those pixels are kind of spread out. But on a 43-inch display, you get this larger than usual size, and the dots are smushed together closer because it's a smaller canvas for those. And it's really been working well, so I really like that. If you're on an Apple computer, or this even applies to a Windows computer, there are some functions of the primary display that are beneficial. And there are some times when it's beneficial to have two displays, even if one of them is just a smaller display off to the side. You can have some controls there. It's a busy day on the trail today. Those are some service vehicles going by on this walking trail. But yeah, you can have your primary window maybe being a video that you're watching, or you're editing a large audio multi-track project, or editing a video or whatever. And then on your secondary display, have something that you're monitoring or files that you're opening up. And here's what I want you to think about is when you go full screen with a program, you know, it takes up the whole screen. So you don't easily have other windows off to the right-hand side. Well, if you have a secondary display, you can have one display going full screen and then have in the other display multiple windows. And some of the Snap 2 features of Windows, for example, where you click and drag a window to the top, left, or right, or bottom, but to maximize a window, those work differently when you're on multiple displays. Just a word about keyboards. For those of you who've lasted this long, and I know I've gone way over my normal 20-minute show limit, but if you're still here, I'll keep giving you some information, and that is with regard to keyboards. I have found that Apple computers, for me, have been the best Windows computer that's available, and let me explain that. Apple computers can run Windows, either in full screen or with software. They can run Windows in a window. You can have a Windows 10 computer running within an Apple computer. And also, there are times for me as a support person where I'm logging in remotely to help somebody with their Windows computer. One of the big reasons I like Apple is that the Apple keyboards are very, very nice. The key travel is limited, and they're just fast and easy to type on. Some people have complained that their last round of laptops had keys that didn't have enough travel. You tap on the key and there's what feels like no travel at all. But the desktop keyboards are quite nice. And also, the pointing device on an Apple computer is very nice. The trackpad that's available, I really like. For a mouse, I use a cheap, you know, it costs like $5 or $10, I think, at the Goodwill store, or, you know, online maybe $15, but just these cheap mice, I really like. They're lightweight, they're easy to click, you won't fatigue as easily because you're not, you know, having to force your finger to click something really hard, and you're not having to, just move around something heavy. And so I use those mice. Apple's mice are kind of weird. They're sharp on the edges. They're low profile. They're artistically designed, but not very ergonomic. But the touchpad is amazing. It really is. And the gestures you can use to slide from one screen to another, to double click, you can adjust this. So it's a very light touch. Now, the reason I mention that is because some people are on the computer a lot. There are some days where I'm on the computer for, you know, 8 to 16 hours, practically, it feels like, other than short breaks in between. So I'm really looking for ways to have the least negative impact on my body when I'm working these long hours. And by having multiple input devices, and what I mean is that, you know, having a mouse in my right hand and using a trackpad with my left hand and alternating back and forth, it considerably reduces repetitive stress. So that's important. And the keyboard, because it requires so little effort, it helps to reduce the stress on your wrists, on your fingers, and even in your upper arms, if you notice there's some muscle use when you're working at the desk. So for that reason, I really like Apple as sort of the hardware to use. And whenever I've been on an iMac using an Apple display, I find that their displays are really quite nice. My current setup, as I explained, is a 43-inch Samsung TV and then an old, smaller HP display. But that's just a word about, you know, mice and trackpads. And I do have another sort of favorite keyboard. It's a Logitech keyboard. It's $30 or $40, I think. And it has three yellow buttons in the upper left. So I can tap the first button, and that Logitech keyboard will let me type on my iPhone. And I tap the middle button, and I can use it to type on the computer. And then I tap the right button, and I can use it to type on my iPad. So it's this one keyboard that works for three devices. And it has a little more key travel, a little more resistance. But these keycaps on this particular Logitech keyboard are curved. They are like an old typewriter. If you've ever touched one or seen one, you know the old typewriters some of them would have these keys that are really the shape of your finger when you touch them. And so this is just like the nicest keyboard to type on for that feel. And only the resistance is what causes me not to use it as my daily use keyboard. But it's also very portable, that Logitech keyboard. So I would sometimes take that with me on a job site to be able to type into the iPhone or type into the iPad. And there again, I guess just to touch on fatigue, is that if you can use voice input on your computer or on your, you know, phone, that's a great way to switch off from typing and start doing some talking, just to make sure you don't fatigue yourself with the typing. It's probably not an issue for people that are only on the computer an hour a day or whatever, checking email, but for those of us who are just constantly on the computer working and producing content, you'll want to look for ways to distribute that stress. And it's just like your workout. You know, when you go to the gym, you have a lot of different exercises you do, and you rest on certain days to let your body recover. Well, it's the same idea with computers. So these are all just bonus tips at the end of the show. Maybe I've lost a number of people who've tuned out by now, but hopefully now this sort of bundle of information is going to be useful. And what I'm trying to do with these podcasts is take the consulting that I normally provide, which I, you know, people would pay me to provide them with some advice, and, you know, based on the experience and expertise that I have working on tech support for so many years. But I'm trying to take that advice and bundle it up and give people sort of 90% of what they would need to decide what computer to buy or what printer to buy or how to set up their home Wi-Fi network or whatever. And then, you know, for the people that really need additional support, I can schedule time in and charge my normal rate. But if there's information I can provide that can be easily accessible and digested by a lot of people, that's what I'm trying to do. And there's always other work out there to be done that I can earn money doing. So it's a business model similar to what Google offers. You know how you can get your free Google account and do free searching on the web? Well, that wasn't always the case. There was a time when doing something that was the equivalent of a Google search would cost $100 an hour. That was back in the 70s. And by now, that would be like paying $500 an hour to use Google, you know? So Google's offering that for free. And having email service would be like from AOL or CompuServe or Prodigy. You might pay $20 or $25 a month, which would cover your dial-up, but would also give you this ability to have an email service. So Google's giving that for free. And Google's giving free cloud storage for your photos and things up to, I think it's 15 gigabytes or something. So I like that business model that, you know, a lot of people are served with the products and services they can use and need from day to day without needing to buy anything extra. And for those who do need extra, they can pay and they help subsidize the whole thing, I guess, for everyone else. But that's what I like to do with my business, is provide the 90% of what 90% of the people need, because that's, I can do that at very low cost, you know, do one of these podcasts while I'm taking my morning walk. So minimal cost to me, but maximum value, a lot of value to the people that benefit from it. So, well, we're nearing the end of episode 3 of Walk and Talk with Greg Johnson. Yep, that's it. So I appreciate those of you who've been following these podcasts, or maybe you're finding them through a Google search. I appreciate you taking time to listen. Appreciate the feedback. Appreciate the comments and the subscriptions. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that through iTunes or through Spotify. Just use whatever your favorite podcast platform is, and let me know if you don't find the show on your preferred platform, and I'll try to make it available there. I wanted to provide an addendum to today's podcast on buying the right computer or mobile device, and mention that I overlooked the option of having an Apple Mac Mini computer that runs the Mac OS just like the other computers, but what you're buying is a relatively small, squarish in its appearance computer that can be tucked away on a bookshelf for as long as it has airflow. The advantage of that is that, similarly to having a separate component Windows computer, you can go out and buy really a variety of different keyboards, trackpads, mice, displays, etc. So it has the normal USB ports on it. It's pretty much like a traditional Windows desktop computer in that it can be expanded through these ports. It's a little difficult to get inside because it's a small, tight space device, but that's what I use at home. I have the Mini and then separate components for displays and keyboards and mice, etc., all plugged in, as well as backup drives and data drives and things that are external. So I wanted to mention that in case those who are listening to the show were wondering about that option. So, okay, well, that's it. And I appreciate that Anchor.fm podcasting service, the way their shows are produced, they let you sort of add segments in and organize them. So you could have a show with multiple segments in one show, in one episode, and then rearrange how they appear in sequence, how you listen to the show. And the advantage of that then is after producing a podcast, you don't have to go back and re-record the whole thing or edit it and add to the end. You can just add another segment on that day's show. So that's how I was able to do this. And I'll probably provide these addendums in shows if there are things that are left out, overlooked, or incorrectly stated, or if there are questions that come in from listeners, I can kind of make some comments at the end there and have further discussion. So that'll be available later. So anyway, that's it for today, and I look forward to sharing more with you soon. Take care.